The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
A lot happened since the last time we met on Friday. So at the request of Donald J. Trump, the Justice Department officially filed a request to unseal grand jury transcripts. This in the prosecution of pervert, pedophile, convicted, now dead, sexual abuser Jeffrey Epstein and his convicted former girlfriend. But don't hold your breath for those documents to reveal much of anything, okay? Why is that? Because every expert says it's unlikely to produce much, if anything, to satisfy the public's appetite and many of you, MAGA's appetite for new revelations about the former financier's crimes. And former federal prosecutors are being interviewed all over the place, on the right, on the left. Everybody agrees that this is not expected to produce much. Why is that? So let me tell you the news and everything that happened. And I'm going to circle back to results as well within the Trump administration, because yesterday really should have been a victory day, a victory lap day for the Trump administration. Yesterday, July 20th, 6 months since we were all celebrating at the NAC. Remember? Newtown Athletic Club. It was January 20th. I want to take you back. We were celebrating. It was packed. Sarah Weiss brought the Trump champagne. The champagne was flowing. My great friend Linda Kearns was sitting beside me. We were celebrating. It was an incredible day. And we should have had the same sentiment yesterday, 6 months later. I'll go through it and I'll share with you. Here's the celebration. Thank you, Dan. Celebration. We should be celebrating. The champagne should have been flowing yesterday. We had so much to celebrate. Look at the economy. Look at Doge. Look at all of the great accomplishments by the Trump administration. Gas prices down, egg prices down, everything we were complaining about. And then think about where we were 6 months ago, where we are now. It should be celebration. And instead, really, you're talking about Epstein files. So Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanch, and again, this is per Trump's request, demand, if you will. So made that official written request Friday, asking judges to unseal those transcripts from grand jury proceedings that resulted in the indictments against Epstein and Maxwell, saying that, quote, transparency to the American public is of the utmost importance to this administration. But as I said at the beginning, Epstein, he's dead. That sick, evil, you know, and this is a guy who cut that sweetheart deal, as I've told you, back in, what, 2007, 2008-ish, after he raped a 14-year-old. He should have been locked away, right, for the rest of his life back then. Keep in mind, in 2004, that's when we know through all the evidence that Trump had cut off ties with Epstein, broke ties with him way back 21-plus years ago. But everybody wants to talk about this, that even some of you in under the Trump and Republican tent. Why does this continue? But Epstein, he killed himself. Whether he killed himself, whether he didn't, it's what you want to talk about. And that allows CNN, the left, the liberals, to keep this story alive and not report all the success, all the celebration that should be reported within this administration. Okay? So we know that nearly 3,000 pages of Epstein records have already been released. And because grand juries, whether, you know, I've covered this for years. So in a grand jury indictment like this, it's going to be heavily redacted. Even if they try to lift some of that, you're going to see hundreds of pages rather than thousands of pages. And because, as I am the Padawan of Zioli, as you well know, I'm still a Padawan. As the great Rich Zioli always says, the lawyers always win. Because, and that's why Dershowitz, Alan Dershowitz, is trying to tell people he has seen all this. He was a lawyer for Epstein. He knows all of this. What he has said over and over is, because of the threat of all these lawsuits, because nobody's convicted, if they go ahead and release the claims of self-proclaimed victims without any due process for those accused perpetrators, not convicted, right? Then you open up a whole new ball of wax and those people are going to sue. You see what I'm saying? And so basically, this too will be heavily redacted. I still hope that they release what they can, because hopefully, finally, you'll be satisfied. Okay. And I want to say this, and this is important for those of us who see pedophiles, as I always say, somebody who has in my news career, in my other life as a TV news reporter, covering these sicko psycho pedophiles locally, nationally, I can tell you that, of course, I wish this guy would have been locked. He should have been locked away way back in the day, back in 2007. He should have been locked away, but he was not. That deal during the Bush administration, everything should be made transparent as to the why, okay? And you can criticize Pam Bondi for going on Jesse Waters that fateful day. What was it, February 26th? I've talked about it. Oh, well, Jesse, breaking news. These files, we're going to release them. I don't know. Was it a rookie media mistake? I have no idea, but I'm over it. I want transparency in all these things? I do. And I know you do too. And I know we want accountability and we want the transparency. I think the problem here is that they never actually had a list, and it was Bondi making some kind of a prediction to be, I don't know, sexy and salacious on one of the biggest shows on TV. I don't know what that was, but she clearly did not have the list. It clearly was not on her desk. That's obvious to me. And so this is the best they can do. Release what you've got. I think that's smart. It's wise. And if the Southern District of whatever, Manhattan, if they don't want to release it, or they release it in a heavily redacted way, then that's on them. That's my feeling. You can let me know, 855-839-1210. So a couple of things, okay? A couple of things that I want to go through. First of all, in this one, let's find out what's been going on. What's been going on also happening on Friday? And I'm going to give you a flashback in a moment just to remind you of what you now know that you did not know prior to the Trump administration launching January 20th and how amazing that is. Okay. In this one, let's talk about this one. Let's talk about, and I'll go to clip 01C. This is Tulsi Gabbard as she's saying the words treasonous conspiracy. This is something we would not know, but thanks to now, and this is not just Tulsi Gabbard. I'm going to take you through all of it. Here's the latest on these 100 documents released, newly released, and news of a whistleblower.
The implications of this are, frankly, nothing short of historic. Over 100 documents that we released on Friday really detail and provide evidence of how this treasonous conspiracy was directed by President Obama just weeks before he was due to leave office, after President Trump had already gotten elected. This is not a Democrat or Republican issue. This is an issue that is so serious it should concern every single American, because it has to do with the integrity of our democratic republic. What we saw occur here, as the documents we released detailed, was that we had a sitting president of the United States and his cabinet and leadership team, quite frankly, who were not happy with the fact that President Trump had won the election, that the American people had chosen Donald J. Trump to be the next president commander-in-chief of the United States. And so they decided that they would do everything possible to try to undermine his ability to do what voters tasked President Trump to do. So creating this piece of manufactured intelligence that claims that Russia had helped Donald Trump get elected contradicted every other assessment that had been made previously in the months leading up to the election that said exactly the opposite, that Russia neither had the intent nor the capability to try to, quote unquote, hack the United States election for the presidency of the United States. So the effect of what President Obama and his senior national security team did was subvert the will of the American people, undermining our democratic republic, and enacting what would be essentially a years-long coup against President Trump, who was duly elected by the...
So think about that. So think about this. What? So remember, I just want to just remind you of something. Remember how everybody said, oh, you know, Trump was rude to Obama, and Obama was so gracious to him and left the White House. Oh, Trump, he's nasty. He's rude. So, and I'm going to fast forward in a second. I'm going to tie this all together for you. So think about what Democrats do when they're leaving office, right? And booby trap for Trump coming in. And by the way, I'm going to do the same thing when I talk about what Biden did in the 76 days between Trump winning, right, and then Trump taking office just this past January 20th. I'm going to tie this together, but let's go back to what this looks like. So in other words, what they're saying, what's being alleged here is that this is the Director of National Intelligence, that's Tulsi Gabbard, making public more than 100 pages of these emails, these memos, other records, cataloging what she's describing as something that's horrifying. Talk about a danger to democracy. My God. What they're saying and what she's saying, listen to her words, conspiracy to subvert President Trump 2016 victory. So they got busy. So these are the most disingenuous individuals, right? Of saying, oh, bless their heart, and we're so gracious, and we're going to write a nice letter and leave it on the desk. Meantime, behind your back, leaving basically IEDs to explode your presidency and consume the media with lies. So that's what this is, a big lie, the Steele dossier, Russia, Russia, Russia. And who are the names? And they go through all these emails, and you can look it up yourself. Don't take my word for it. Don't listen to CNN. Don't listen to Fox. Look it up yourself if you choose, because it's all there, going through all of these. And you know whose names you see over and over, right? You see the same names. And one of the names, former FBI head, and that was Comey. Oh, what a nasty, disingenuous guy. I'll also remind you that earlier this month, CIA Director John Ratcliffe, he also released what was then described as a bombshell review of the 2016 assessment that concluded that Obama-era individuals, we're talking about Clapper, Brennan, Comey, that they, quote, deliberately corrupted all of this for potential political motives. How nasty these guys are. And yet, where do you see that on CNN? So when you keep this Epstein thing alive, just a pro tip here, you keep it alive because that's what CNN, they keep all of these MSNBC, Rachel Maddows of the world, they're quoting you. They're quoting your MAGA, your Twitter, your social media, your Facebook, whatever social media, your Insta, and saying, oh, MAGA, they're mad. They're divided. Well, I'm not divided. Okay. I can do a couple, and some of us have said this. We can have different emotions all at the same time. We can support Trump and the just magnificent job. He superseded all of my expectations in the last 6 months. I believe he has done so for you as well, as I look at the poll numbers, quite frankly. But I want to also take you back, and this is important, and we're going to go to the Kennedy bite if we could here, Dan. And this is thinking about the 76 days in between Trump being, you know, declaring victory thanks to you and me standing in that line. Remember the night, election night, and Trump calling in, and we were all on the air here, all of us here at Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, and Donald J. Trump calls in. He's on the line with Zioli, and Rich Zioli says, you know, we're hearing about people and the staying in the line, and how, and Trump says, oh, yes, stay in line. Stay in that line. You stayed in line and Trump was voted in. But what happened next? See, we didn't realize what the Biden administration got busy with in that 76-day period in between Trump winning the election, but ding, 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 Biden was still in office. What was his administration doing between that 76 days? Well, they weren't cleaning off the desk or cleaning out their drawers. Oh, no, no. They were cleaning out, well, let me call it this, the fleecing of America. We now know, thanks to Doge, Let's listen to Senator. This is Senator Kennedy, and this is one of these great hearings just in May where we were learning about all the money that was just going out the window with no financial fingerprints.
Back to some of your earlier testimony. Be sure I heard it correctly. The 76-day period you're talking about, that's the period between the time that President Trump was elected and President Biden left office. Is that right?
That is correct.
And during that short period of time, 76 days, how much taxpayer money went out the door of the Department of Energy?
From the loan program office in loans and commitments, $93 billion. Well over twice as much as in the previous 15 years. So
how do you vet and do due diligence on a loan in 76 days? One loan, much less $93 billion. How do you do it?
I think it's probably pretty clear it wasn't done in many cases. As I mentioned, I'm told I'm holding back clearly in place stuff. There is lots of funds that have gone out the door and commitments that were made from businesses that provided no business plan, no numbers about their own financial solvency or how this project.
So you're telling me that the Department of Energy, in the 76-day period, before their boss was going to leave office, gave our loan money to entities that had no business plan?
Correct.
No financials?
Correct. A number of those
no
were
financials.
Were before the 76-day period as well. I've come in with great concern about how this institution, this great American institution, has been run and how American taxpayer money has been handled.
Yeah, let me tell you how it's been handled. That was Chris Wright, by the way. And that was a hearing, an Appropriations Committee hearing, happened about like seven, eight weeks ago. So through DOGE, and because Trump was elected, basically, we're learning about the fleecing of America. Those are our tax dollars. And the point is, and we learned this from Elon Musk, which is why I will always be grateful to Elon Musk and what he was able to kick off as far as the Department of Government Efficiency, which continues to this day, that was created under Trump as an official department where they're always looking at, you know, accountability, much like in the private sector. But that is shocking. That basically that $93 billion went to things like, I don't know, NGOs. We don't know. No financial fingerprints. Now, Elon Musk and the department and the Trump administration have tried to put the kibosh on that, if you will, and have tried to make sure that every check that's written in the future will have basically fingerprints to it, will have a number, a digital code, etc., so that you can audit these different departments. But it didn't. Before. So I just want to point out to you, as you say, well, we want transparency. Okay, well, you're getting transparency. This administration has done more in 6 months than I believe the previous administration, the Biden administration, or the Obama administration gave any of us in all of these years. In fact, if you look at actions rather than words, so if you want to be critical of somebody like Pam Bondi, who I don't know, maybe she just overpromised. She was giddy to have this big job and giddy to work for President Trump. I think she's very loyal. My feeling about her is that she was really overpromising and trying to be, you know, give this big news and all of that. If you want to criticize these individuals and even the administration for not dotting every I before going out into a news conference situation, okay, I'm with you. Never overpromise, right? But on the other hand, if you want to look at the actions of an administration rather than their disingenuous words, so President Obama, President Biden, two administrations, what they were busy doing once Democrats lost, their priorities were not about the American people. They were not about preserving our tax dollars and respecting us. No, no, no. They were disrespecting us. That's what they were busy doing. They went after the money. That's what they were doing, the money grab. And in both cases, they were also going after basically leaving booby traps. I'll say further, they were trying to blow up the future administration, which means going against the will of the people. Think about that. Just think about that for a moment. All of the disruption that they were about, not about truth, not about justice, and certainly not about serving we the people. That's the action that we see. So before you go ahead and continue on this path to say, oh, I will never vote again, I'm not standing with Trump until ... I get all the answers with Epstein. Understand that all of these administrations dating all the way back to 2007, they were the ones who had the goods and never released it. And all of these administrations, Donald J. Trump wasn't even a thought. He was still on The Apprentice, if I'm not mistaken. No, you can't blame him for this. You can blame maybe for some sloppiness, maybe for some media blunders within the administration. But follow the money trail on this. Follow the facts. Follow the tangible evidence. And that's what I'm trying to say here. 855-839-1210. Just ahead, what Trump is reposting, the Shady Bunch rather than the Brady Bunch. And I will ask the question, do you believe that it was wrong for Trump to repost? He's getting criticized and praised for an AI video that he posted of President Obama. And it's just an AI. It's an imaginary thing of Obama being arrested in the Oval. Was that over the top? We'll pose that question to you just ahead. Thanks for being here. Had to get that off my chest. We'll be right back. So just ahead, we'll have a wonderful, informative interview, great interview with, and we'll talk about Maha and health and your health. And we'll get into that and some new studies. There's a new study on America's children and our health as well. We'll get into all of that. And then a little bit later, we'll talk more about the video that was reshared by President Trump, really raising eyebrows, and a lot of people are commenting on that. It was a TikTok user, but an AI-inspired video showing the arrest of former President Barack Obama. And then as well, what about the Shady Bunch, kind of a play on the Brady Bunch? We'll get into all of that, today's headlines, much more. Stay right there. This is the At Dawn Stensland Show. Be right back.
The worst health outcome is because of chronic disease. And we've got to figure out what's causing it, eliminate it. We have, and it's not rocket science. It's glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup. It's neonicotinoid pesticides. It's atrazine. It's PFOAs, the forever chemicals that are in all of our child's pajamas. They're in our furniture. I've litigated on them as well. It's high fructose corn syrup.
These other countries don't have that?
No. If you want to drink a Coke, drink a Mexican Coke. Because they don't allow it down there. There's 1,000 ingredients in our food that are banned in Europe. And we're poisoning, we're mass poisoning an entire generation of kids. These kids are obese. It's not because they suddenly got lazy.
The health of children in the United States, according to another new study, thanks to researchers at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, CHOP, along with a doctor from UCLA, saying the health of children in the United States has deteriorated significantly across nearly every major health indicator over the past nearly two decades. They're looking at 17 years, and they draw on data from several national surveys on mortality statistics, and these from looking at more than 2 million children, American children, published in JAMA. So this is a well-received study confirming what many of us, including, RFK Jr., who you just heard, but many of us, even if you travel overseas, how often have I talked about this? Going to Italy, going to other places where they don't allow the ingredients that we have in our foods. And so we'll talk about the study and highlighting that, but just one of them. Among 3 to 17-year-olds, the prevalence of chronic conditions increasing up to 45, almost 46% in pediatric health systems. So on the good side of that, I want to bring in my next guest. And this is Tim Keller, healthcare and lifestyle analyst, founder of U.S. Diabetes Care. And I will say, and Tim, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but Tim, you're a man on a mission to really use education and things like apps and a new diabetes app to try to educate our youth and all of us really on how to just get healthier, really to embolden us. Good morning. Thanks for being here. Really appreciate you being here, Tim.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're absolutely right. Education is, you know, the foundation of everything, right? And especially for your health. We developed this educational app and series, and you hit the nail on the head for everybody. It's not just for a diabetic. It's anybody looking to change their lifestyle. Of course, our focus is diabetes just because it's such a chronic disease. And it's not just, you know, United States, worldwide, diabetes is actually an epidemic. You're right. A lot of the foreign countries that don't allow the extra ingredients in their food, they're still getting those foods. I mean, you go to some foreign countries, if you want to find some processed American food, you can find them. And unfortunately, a lot of people consume them. Insulin resistance is the cause of all chronic disease state, actually. And so insulin resistance is caused in the cells, and the cells that live in the muscle that take the glucagon or the energy from the liver for energy, and those cells get dysfunction. It causes insulin resistance, which causes all chronic disease states. Now, of course, all the chemicals and ingredients and poisons that are in our foods cause that insulin resistance. And so, people aren't eating the right things. They're not hydrating with water, the right kind of water. They're not eating fiber. They're not exercising. They're not eating a lot of fruits and vegetables. These are all things we promote in our education app. A lot of meat is very processed and even toxic. People eat meat, lunch, breakfast, dinner, and they're not too much meat consumption is inflammatory. So we're not telling people don't eat meat, but we try to tell people to cut back on their meat consumption, especially if it's processed meat. And so the education, is, as you mentioned, is so key, and that's really been our focus, because when we started U.S. Diabetes Care several years ago, we were doing clinical diabetes, and we just really realized that these diabetics were coming in from primary care with no education on diabetes, and they've been diabetic, 10, 15 years, mm-hmm. and we basically taught them more about their diabetes in one visit than they knew in 15 years of primary care. So we kind of said, hey, we have to really focus on education more than the clinical side. And we do a good job on the clinical side as well, but, the power is in the mind, right? You fix the mind and educate on what you're supposed to do, you can change your life.
And with a part of this, can you tell me, first of all, when you talk about diabetes being an epidemic, you're talking about type 2 diabetes, but now there are all these, it used to be juvenile diabetes, so-called type 1 versus type 2, but now they're saying that there are all these different levels. For example, people in their 30s being diagnosed with some form of type 1. And then we learned during the pandemic that, for example, they said that worldwide they saw this very concerning explosion of type 1 diabetes. It used to be very rare. Now we're seeing more and more people being diagnosed with that. How do you explain that?
Well, so what they're trying to figure out with these late onset type 1 diabetics, especially around the COVID area, I blame the vaccine, and I blame a lot of these, I even blame the, vaccine that the kids get all the way to the, COVID vaccine. It attacks the pancreas and basically kills all the beta cells in the pancreas. And so, now no one's going to come out and admit that because there'd be class action mass lawsuits. But how do you explain a perfectly healthy 35-year-old who's never had a health issue in their life, don't even have diabetes in their family, don't even have type 1 diabetes in the family? And I don't believe any of those conditions are really genetic anyway. I think there's a like side of it, right? So if somebody's pancreas likely gets attacked by a virus, it can be susceptible. Mm-hmm. But That's the other thing. The virus itself, the COVID virus itself, has been studied that there's people that have it's attacked the pancreas and shut their beta cells and the pancreas down. And now, you know, they become an onset type 1 diabetic. Yeah. I actually have a friend that it happened to, and, you know, quite honestly, he's in the anger phase right now because he's like, you know, why me? I mean, I was 35, perfectly healthy, you know, working out, doing everything right, and all of a sudden I get knocked down with this type 1 diabetes. And so, like I said, I go back to these vaccines, the virus itself, that is the cause of the pancreas failure.
Yep, I mean, full disclosure, and our listeners and viewers on YouTube know this already, but my son Michael, during the pandemic, but before the COVID vaccine was available, was diagnosed, and this was a kid, healthy, lean, in crew and in sports, working out 6 mornings a week at, you know, 5 in the morning, no family history on either side for my husband and I. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And it was a shocker, but we had all had the COVID virus, but had not had the vaccine. At this point, the vaccine wasn't just yet available, or maybe just becoming available. And I've always theorized that, and we did hear about that the virus itself maybe, I don't know, triggered something. So I hope that we get to the bottom of that. But for me, whenever I see somebody like you looking at diabetes, looking at health, trying to educate people, you know, that's why full disclosure, I have an ulterior motive, if you will, a personal motive to talk about this, because there are things that we can do. And that's just it. When Michael, when we were at Children's Hospital, they said, oh, there's nothing you did. There's nothing you can do. You can eat anything you want. And I really, I know what they were trying to say, because there's a lot of, you know, you wonder, did I do something on one hand? But on the other hand, there's a lot that we can control. And that's really where I see you coming in and your group, Tim, as far as saying there's a lot you can do here.
A ton you can do. And then how old is Michael?
Well, now he's 21. He was in high school at the time, because this was, you know, during the pandemic.
Yeah. I'm convinced that it was the virus that knocked out his pancreas. I mean, yeah. I've seen it many, many, many patients of ours that this has happened to. Perfectly healthy, you know, same like Michael. I mean, you know, in their teenage years and in high school, no explanation, out of the blue. Yep. Pandemic came through and boom, type 1.
Yep.
It just knocked out the pancreas through a virus. And so there is some research going on for some viral type 1s. There's like a protocol. There's a gentleman named Chip Hall. He's out of Oklahoma. He's an expert in the cannabinoid system, endocannabinoid system, and he's got a little bit of a breakthrough that I think with rebooting the pancreas on some type 1s that have been knocked out by virus. I can get you his information at some later time if you want to email me.
I'd love it. Thank you.
Yeah, because I've been working with him directly on you know, also a multi-supplement all-in-one for diabetes deficiencies, because, you know, that's the thing. Diabetes also knocks out deficiencies in the body of certain vitamins and and things that we need. And so I'm trying to work on an all-in-one, you know, supplement for him instead of a diabetic having to go buy, you know, 15 vitamins, you know, just end up, you know, making one so that they can only have to take one and actually really good for them and where they're deficient in it.
Yeah, it's just so important. But as far as the app that's created, the, you know, it's U.S. Diabetes Care launching this new app, and it's interactive. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so, you know, basically the app, it's not a gamification app. We might come up with a gamification app later, but right now I want people to focus on what's really important, and that's education. So we talk about the truth about diabetes, the bold, big, ugly truth about diabetes, without apology. We know that this is a man-made, created disease. There's no money in a cure. Big pharma and big medicine are making a lot of money on the back of diabetics. So we talk about that. The truth about diabetes was that before, once a diabetic, always a diabetic. That's not true. We educate people on that. We educate people on oxidative stress. We educate on brain health. We educate on you know, the difference between healthy, good and bad fats. You know, the reality is refined fats and the refined foods that we're eating there is what's poisoning and killing us. And so we really talk about education from that level as well. So we have about 8 one-hour series that people can learn everything about their diabetes and really start making some lifestyle changes to improve better health. We have a 90% reversal rate of type 2 diabetes of people that actually follow our program, and ones that, you know, want to just dabble in and out of it, they still have way better, tighter measures. And there's also another, you know, website for Michael that I would love you to look up. It's Mastering Diabetes. They are Roger Barbero and Cyrus Kambaga. They're both autoimmune. Two smartest guys I know for autoimmune type 1 diabetes, and they have a massive following, and they have life coaches as well for type 1. And they got type 1s taking less than 10, 15 units of insulin a day.
That's amazing.
So we promote all of our type 1s to them because they're the experts in type 1. I mean, we're very good at treating type 1s as well, but I'm telling you, Mastering Diabetes is, you know, they got the name for a reason. They are the masters of type 1 diabetes.
Well, I thank you for that. And that's just it. No matter if somebody has type 1 or type 2, or even there's now this identified type 3 and all these different types, with all of these, basically, I love your message, which is no matter what condition, no matter what autoimmune, there is a lot that you can do, because I think people, when they're diagnosed with any chronic, especially autoimmune condition, there's a feeling of hopelessness to think, oh, well, there's nothing I can do. And this is a way to take control, like you're saying, and do something. I think that that's so important to your overall mental health as well.
Well, 100%. And the thing is that's the problem with the westernized medicine and the way it's designed for hopelessness, and people don't, you know, derive hope from healthcare. Most people, when they go, they get the white coat syndrome, they don't want to go see the doctor. The reason why, you spend 2 hours waiting to see the doctor and you get 5 minutes with them. How can you change anyone's outcome in 5 minutes? You can't. And so, you know, if their outcome is just throwing a bunch of medicines at you, you know, we're not going to change people for better health because people think that, you know, they got the pills to fix, and the pills never the answer. God made our bodies really unique in the standpoint that we can heal ourselves. And like I said, I even have hope for Michael that, you know, with some relationships I have, that, you know, maybe we can get him, you know, going in the right direction with that. And, you know, God put everything on this earth, I think, to heal us. And I think that people need to be educated on what those right things are. And start making better choices for health. I mean, they got to get out. You know, I call the four recipe. It's, you know, drinking more water, get more fiber intake, eat more fruits and vegetables, and exercise. That's a great start to your diabetes, and then educate yourself on top of that.
I love your message. Dan Borowski had a question as well.
Well, I got a couple. So first off, I'm just curious, how much do you think this is the fault of parents themselves versus the fault of the government, the FDA? Because you look, we played at the start of the clip how cane sugar, you know, Coke is now moving towards that, and Mexican Coke uses cane sugar, and high fructose corn syrups are being phased out largely because of RFK. I feel like a lot of times parents just didn't have much of a choice because the options that were given to them as Americans were unhealthy options. How much do you blame the FDA versus how much do you blame parents themselves?
I blame it all on the government and the FDA. And I mean, look, if, you know, people are uneducated, but when we're taking uneducated people and offering terrible foods because of cost restrictions and things like that, I mean, some of these families, I mean, me and my wife were talking about the other day how they can make it on what little money they're making with the inflation of groceries and things like that. I remember when I went with a kid and went to the grocery store, my mom, she filled up a whole cart for $100. You barely have a quarter of a cart for $100. And so these people can't afford, you know, they think they can't afford healthier food. So they're, you know, loading up the cart with all this processed crap. You know, there was no regulations on those foods. And quite honestly, you know, kids with all the computers and gamification and all that, they're not getting out and exercising. You go by a park, you don't see any kids out running around anymore. These are all, you know, self-created things. And I mean, we can probably put some blame on the parents if they're feeding the kids this, but that's where we talk about everybody, oh, well, I have diabetes because it's genetic in my family. It's not genetic. Diabetes type 2 is not a genetic disease. It's a man-made disease, but if you eat like your parents and eat like their parents did and eat like their parents did, which is a bunch of processed refined fats and food, yeah, there's probably a bigger risk of obesity and diabetes and being unhealthy. But I still go back. There's no money in a cure. So yeah. If we put a bunch of bad foods out there and people are consuming them, there's going to be disease state, and then that, you know, obviously that creates a profit.
Well, listen, Tim Keller, I hope you come back. I want to continue the conversation with you. I know everybody's captivated by you, more than 30 years of experience in the health, you know, and medical industry, but it's U.S. Diabetes Care. Tim Keller, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you for setting him up, Dan. I think that he's, you know, somebody who we want to hear more from as we think about MAHA and what we can all do. So
it's something really, I hate to say, it's a topic that's very important to me because, as we know, there's a little one on the way.
Yep. And Dan and his wife, Maisie. The baby's due in October, little girl.
And, you know, I want options. Like I'll use the corny memed example, meme to death, but Fruit Loops, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Fruit Loops in America are different than those that are given to European
yeah.
kids. And it's filled with stuff that doesn't need to be there, but it's cheaper to, you know, shove on consumers. So I welcoming a little one here, it's become very important to me that the foods I want to give her are ones I want to be beneficial for her health in the future. And
yeah, don't give her Fruit Loops. Just bottom line, don't even do cereal. Just, you're better off with a banana or just some blueberries or a piece of fruit.
Yeah.
Don't even do.
I'm going to be relying really heavily on you for this.
It's so not.
I hope you are prepared for.
I know. It's not.
The
Dan,
diet advice.
Here's the thing with even oatmeal. People think anything that is, unless it's the steel cut oats, anything that is processed, like when we say high fructose corn syrup, it's the heat. And there are all these studies that surround this. So the reason we have these crunchy cereals that we love with that incredible crunch is that high heat to which we produce it. They don't have that. They don't do that in other countries like in Europe because it causes cancer and all kinds of problems.
Hmm.
So just the high heat alone, then you add the chemicals to it, it's a disaster.
That's fascinating.
So unless you do the steel cut stuff, which is like grandma made it in the pot, you know what I mean, boiled and it's slow cooked and it takes like 30 minutes or whatever.
Really?
All that high heat cereal that's produced like that, there are studies that go back decades. They knew it was bad for us. Then they add in all the chemicals and all the preservatives. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. And that's the thing that I really want to underline is I look at Michael, I look at Dave, and I see two steel cut individuals.
Yeah.
Like really healthy, lean, healthy individuals. And I'm scared. I hate to say for my daughter's future, because how am I a parent able to ensure that she ends up healthy when I see two very healthy individuals here and one of them having a diabetes, you know, at some point late in his life? It's sad. So,
yeah,
you know, I look to you as a fantastic parent. I will be coming to you for advice.
Aww.
But it's a sad, and I hope RFK really does get things in order and the FDA does start caring more about Americans than the companies.
Well, to your point, hopefully babies being born like yours and your little girl with you and Maisie, this is, you know, she's being born into a healthier America. And I believe that because just the awareness, just like he said, you know, we were convinced, oh, it's somewhere in your DNA, has nothing to do with anything else. Don't look into anything else. That's what they've told us all this time, right?
Yep.
And yet here we are, 855-839-1210. So I know we have Dave McCormick coming up and we're excited to hear from him as far as the latest of what's going on. But I got to talk about my friends at the Piazza Auto Group. It's really an exciting time for the Piazza Auto Group, PIAZZA, and their five Honda dealerships. Honda winning more 2025 Kelley Blue Book Consumer Choice Awards than any other brand. That includes best overall brand, most trusted brand, best value brand. So maybe you're eyeing the Accord, the CRV, which is what my husband Larry drives, or the Pilot. You're choosing a vehicle backed by real drivers, just like you, just like me. I have the HRV, which I love. It's sportier. It's a little smaller. But come experience the award-winning excellence at Piazza Honda in Philadelphia, Langhorne, Pottstown, Reading, or Springfield. You can always shop online, piazzahonda.com, for all of today's special offers. PiazzaAutoGroup.com, P-I-A-Z-Z-A. Thank you, Piazza. Tell them Dawn sent you.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210, WPHT.